Hello, everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you most want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you most want to lead. It's true. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. And we are funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. To learn more about the PNWA, as well as their wonderful yearly writers conference, please go to pnwa.org. Well, you know, writing can be can at least seem like kind of an unfriendly business. It can be competitive and lonely and angst-inducing, I think. But while today's guest, I'm sure, has had her share of angst, her relationship to her work and to her readers and to other writers is compassionate and humble and honest and anything but unfriendly. And so it's with great pleasure that I welcome Jo Knowles, young adult author Jo Knowles, to the show. Jo, welcome to Author.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it is my pleasure, Jo. Well, let's begin by letting folks know what they should run out and purchase. Your latest novel by Candlewick Press is out now in hardback, ebook, and audiobook. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay, and that'll be out in paperback in September, which also happens to be the release date of your next novel. Would you like to tell us what that one will be called?
Sure. It's called Living with Jackie Chan, and it's a companion novel to my second book, which is called Jumping Off Swings.
Gotcha. All right. Well, so, you know, Jo, like a lot of people very recently, part of how you came to my attention was through a blog post, of all things, that you wrote about video, or was it a video you had seen, or just the I'm trying to remember now, or just the portion of the interview that you heard with Maurice Sendak?
Oh, it was somebody, speaking of Facebook, somebody had posted that little video clip on their Facebook page, and I saw it, and I was so moved by it the first time I saw it, and then it kept sticking with me, and it was about 2 weeks later that I wrote that blog post, because I just continue to be so inspired by that yeah. clip.
Well, it was a great blog post, and it really spoke to the relationship between our lives and our work, which is really the focus of this show and of the magazine and the work I do on Author. And I don't know how you feel about it, but I don't feel that one can divorce what you learn away from the desk with what you learn at the desk, or vice versa. What I've learned writing, I often take to life and so on, and back the other way.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, you know, when I was writing that blog post in particular, I was thinking of this phrase that Maurice Sendak says at the end of that clip when he's saying, live your life, live your life, live your life. And he said it in a very sag way, as if he hadn't necessarily done as much living of his life as he wished until the end of his life. And I kept thinking about that and thinking about what it was like to be a writer. For a lot of us, we live really solitary lives because we tend to work at home and we don't really get to go into an office and go to a water cooler every day and sort of have that kind of interactive living. And what we do get, though, is Twitter and Facebook and this plethora of information about what writers should and shouldn't be doing. And I think that for all of us who are struggling to make a go of this career, we hear all of that noise and it starts to bog us down in how we live our lives, and we say, oh, I should be doing this, and I haven't done that, and I haven't contacted my local bookstore to do a signing, or all the things that probably make a lot of authors who are shy or who get nervous public speaking like I do feel really anxious. And so I was starting to think, like, well, how can I embrace this life I wanted? I've always wanted to be an author for so long, and here I am finally living this dream and letting some of these negative things control how I'm living. And so I just sort of said, this is the year that I'm going to try to turn off some of that noise and turn on some of the more positive noise in my life, I guess.
That's a great way of phrasing it, because it really is just noise, I think. Speaking of publicity, I didn't actually get to do the interview. I had to travel that day, but we did an interview with the young adult novelist John Green, who mm-hmm. has this latest book is doing really well, and he of course is well known on the internet for his YouTube videos and his Twitter followers, is however many million Twitter followers. But he said something very interesting, which is that, and it would seem like he's a great strategist for marketing, but that is not the way he sees it. He said, I do Twitter because I get it and I like it, and I don't do Facebook because I don't get it. And he did the YouTube just because he wanted to do the YouTube, and he started it right when YouTube was still young, and it wasn't some scheme to get famous, you know, or to sell his books. It was just something he wanted to do. And I think that it's really important, because he's had a tremendous amount of success with the kind of self-promotion that writers, you know, are often coached these days to pursue. But he did it organically and in a way that's for him.
I think he's such a great example of doing what you enjoy, and the publicity that's come out of that, I think, has been so successful because he's clearly having fun and he doesn't seem like he's trying to sell himself. So the YouTube videos that he started with his brother were just, in the beginning, this sort of vow to stay in touch with each other for a year, and they just became so wildly successful, I think, because the love they had for each other came through and it was so endearing, and they were also really entertaining and clever and smart, and everyone thought, who are these guys, you know? And so it was a natural way to promote. It didn't feel gimmicky or anything like that, and I think that's how he comes across on Twitter, too. I mean, he uses his celebrity for good, as it were. You know, he has this whole following of amazing teenagers and young people and old people too. I mean, I could consider myself a nerd fighter also, but doing things to raise money for good causes and promoting reading and promoting education in a way that makes sense to John. So he, in addition to the brotherhood videos that he started, he has these great videos that he teaches history and stuff like that. But it all comes down to doing stuff that you enjoy. So I love being on Twitter because lots of other writers and teachers and librarians are there, and I don't feel like I'm necessarily promoting myself there. I feel like I'm having a conversation with people. And of course, I share good news about my books, but a lot of the time I share good news or books that I want my friends to read. So it just feels like a place to naturally hang out. And it's another one of those examples of helping an author or writer who feels like they're alone all the time at home. When I go on Twitter, it makes me feel like, oh, this is my virtual water cooler. You know, I'm hanging out with people who share the same interests as I do. And to some extent, Facebook is like that too. But I think with Facebook, there's more of a mashup of not just your writer friends, but also your friends from high school and your mom and distant relatives and stuff. So it's a little bit more strange, but I try to just be myself in both places and have fun with it and not try to make it be a business. And I think that's one of the pitfalls that some authors fall into, is that they try to just promote, and unfortunately that's kind of a turnoff. So I think instead of gaining readership, they lose it if they try too hard to just sort of sell themselves instead of just being themselves.
You know, I agree 100%. I think one of the last things a writer should do is say, buy my book.
Right.
you know, and it sounds, you know, it sounds counterintuitive, but, you know, whenever I interview authors, and I interview mostly fiction writers, some memoirists, but mostly fiction writers, I say, look, let's not talk about your book, because no matter how good it is, and, you know, there are some fabulous books that get written and that people come to promote. It's going to be boring, and I can't tell you why, but it always is. The book itself could be very interesting, but talking about it, but you can be interesting. So
right.
Share your passion. So, for instance, that lovely blog that you wrote that we were talking about, that was written from the heart. It was written to share a perspective that you consider valuable, and you shared this blog for free, but it reached out to a lot of people, and you shared it, I think, from the same place from which a book that you want to make money off of from should be shared, which is, I wrote this thing, I think it's lovely and valuable, and now I want other people to have it. And hopefully some of the people maybe who read that blog might also find your work or not, but or maybe they'll just take some kind of solace from it, which is okay too.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's funny because the morning that I wrote that post, I was just really trying hard to make sense of, you know, it was early January, and every year I try to sort of set a theme for the year and make some goals. And I emailed my two writing partners and said, I don't know, I feel kind of funny about posting this, but it's really important to me. And they said, oh, post it, post it. And then, of course, it just got so much attention, more than any post I've ever written. And it was just really lovely. But I think what was most affirming was seeing people who I had never met sharing it on Facebook and saying things about how it had changed their perspective that day. And that is so much more rewarding than, I bought Joe's book today. You know, it was just, It was really great. And I felt like I had sort of doubled my community that day with just people sharing, wanting to write good words and wanting to be good people. So it was lovely. It was great.
I think it's great for writers to hear that kind of feedback, because obviously writers are human beings. They're made of flesh and blood, and they need to house themselves and feed themselves and all the rest. And so you have all the normal sort of earthly concerns that can get tied up in this work that is really of the heart. And I think it's wonderful when you hear back, whether it's from a blog or a book, saying, this reached me, this touched me, this moved me, this is to remind you why you're doing this. Yes, you want to make money, and we all want to make money. That's great. But for God's sakes, there's got to be more to life than getting up and not dying. There's got to be something about actually sharing something we love and that experience of it going out and coming back to us that is far more valuable than all the books we'll ever sell.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's that connection. I remember sort of the day that I think maybe it was the first moment that I thought maybe I want to be a writer was when I read something that had won a contest in a literary magazine at my college. So I think I was in my sophomore year, junior year of college, and I had no idea, but when you win, you have to read your work to an audience, and I was terrified. I'm shy now, but when I was in high school and college, I mean, I could barely speak. I never raised my hand in class. It was just the most horrific thing ever. But my college roommate made me practice in front of her, and she came to the reading. She said, just pretend you're reading to me. And so I did that. And when I finished, when I looked up, there were several people in the audience who were teary and some were crying. And I remember thinking, as a quiet kid who doesn't really have a voice, that, wow, I have a voice. I used it and someone heard me and connected with me. And it was the making that connection for the first time that was so powerful. And I feel like as the kind of books that I write, that's what I try to do over and over again. Not make people cry, but make people, connect with a common emotion or experience or something like that. And so I think the most rewarding thing for me is when a teen or an adult reader write to me and say something special about reading one of my books, how it made them feel less alone, for example. Whenever someone says that to me, it's the greatest gift an author can get, is that you've helped someone feel like they weren't alone. And that's what it's all about. Yeah.
Because you know why? Because that is the truth. The truth is you are not alone. And in writing them, you have reminded them of what they actually are. That's a wonderful point. Okay, now we have a guest who would like to ask you a question, I believe, about your writing process. So let's see what he has to say. Jeffrey, is that you?
Bill, thanks for taking my call. Another great interview. Got a bit late in here, getting on a new Blog Talk Radio format. Joe, we have 396 mutual friends on Facebook. I'm our Jeffrey's author there. Please add a subscribe button so we can subscribe to you. I'm
oh,
way
right.
over 5,000 limited friends, so I can't add you. I'm a real fan of your work.
Oh, thank you so much. If you send me an email with your name, I'll find you.
Excellent, excellent. And can you, would you please buy my book, You and Bill, would you mind? listen, I know time is short. Joe, yeah, I wanted to ask you your writing process. I mean, outlining or how you set up your day, how you schedule your day. Time management is so essential for us fellow writers. So could you just please answer that? I'd love to hear your answer. And thank you, Bill, for taking my question.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, okay. So now, Joe, so here's the deal. Writers fall into two camps, generally. There's the outliners, the non-outliners. And, of course, there's crossover. Now, hold on. Now, before you answer that, one of the games I play is to try to guess which you
are. Okay.
Though I saw you say something on one of your blogs which would suggest that you're a big fan of structure, so I'm going to guess you do a loose outline. Is that right?
No, I don't.
Dang it. I would have guessed no. I would have guessed no from your voice, but I saw you say something about structure.
Oh, that's funny.
I didn't trust my instincts. Okay, so you do not outline.
Okay, well, I outline, but I don't outline until after I've written my draft. So I write a really messy first draft, and usually just starts with a character, an idea, and I just sit down and write and go with whatever comes into my head, and the story slowly, very slowly, starts to take shape, or I write lots of scenes, and then eventually they start to tie together, and then I think, okay, here's where I'm headed, and I'll just keep going from there. And so because that process is not the most efficient process in the world, usually about halfway through the first draft, I suddenly stall out, and I think, I don't know what this is. This is a big mess. I like the character. I sort of know what the conflict is, but I'm pretty sure there's no plot yet, and this is terrifying, and what have I done? And so at that point, I have two writing partners who I in the morning, we email each other, and one lives in Connecticut, and one lives nearby me in Norwich, Vermont, and we email each other in the morning and say what our goal for the day is.
Mm-hmm.
And we also email each other throughout the day to check in on each other, usually about every half hour, until we've all three of us have met our goals. So if I meet my goals, then I keep checking in and saying, come on, you can do it, whatever.
Wait, all day long you do this with each other?
Yes, all day long.
Oh, my God. All right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's new. Okay, that's great. So you're right. You really are right there with each other, helping each other along, cheering each other along. Okay, that's great.
Yes, and maybe once a year we meet in person and have a retreat. But one of my partners has lived in China and California, and now finally she's on the same coast as us, so we're very excited. But yeah, so we do that just about every single day, but in addition to that, we share our work with each other. So when I get to this horrible murky middle where I don't know what I'm doing, I will say to them, I'm having a panic attack, what do I do? And then they tell me, you do this every time, and this is your process, and don't worry, and I'll share maybe a few chapters with them, and they'll pinpoint what the book is about for me sometimes. And then I just move on. But it's so helpful to have the two of them. We all three give as much as we take, and it's just been this great relationship, and we've been working this way for, I think, 8 years.
Wow, that's great.
That's how I work. And then, I didn't tell you, but so when I finish my rough draft, that's when I go to that outline process, and I actually make a storyboard of my manuscript. I learned this process from another children's author, Carolyn Coleman, and what she does is she gets a big piece of paper, and she makes a square for every chapter of her manuscript. And then she draws one image for each chapter that's sort of like the strongest image that comes to mind for her. And so I do this too, and it really helps me to see the emotional arc as well as the physical arc of the book, and it also helps me to see what I've got and what chapters. Maybe I have too many emotional chapters in a row or something like that, but it really helps me organize my manuscript at that point.
So I'm
the back outliner, I guess.
Well, all right, so maybe I was half right. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll
give you
it.
Credit.
Oh, thanks. So you mentioned that moment where you reach the middle of your first draft and you think, oh my God, what have I got here? You know,
yeah.
And every writer goes through that. And so for you, I was just having a similar experience yesterday, as a matter of fact. And I was reflecting, oh, it's okay. It's part of the, well, what I was thinking about as it happened to me, and I'm wondering if you do the same thing or if you really do rely upon these friends to help you out of that, which is fine too, is I had the experience and it was a very familiar feeling of sort of hopelessness and, oh, this is never going to blah, blah, blah. But, and this time I thought I am not going to answer that voice. I am not going to argue with it. I am not going to prove it wrong. I am going to practice releasing it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
The experience of simply letting that thought go. It's just fear, of course. But instead of, because there's such a temptation to answer it and try and prove it wrong and so on, but just to release it. So I share that as an experience of how I've had to train myself, because that moment comes up every so often. And
yeah.
So for you, when that comes up, you think that horrible thought. And by the way, I mean, the first person always comes to mind is Louis Sachar, who talked about that in the middle of every single book he wrote. He told me, he said, this happens. I think this is never going to come together and so on.
Yeah.
So how do you really, what do you do with that moment aside from talk to your friends, or is that the most of what you do?
Well, I can answer that because I'm in the midst of it really right now.
Oh.
And what I did was I did my taxes. I just decided, you know, just put it away because do something that's really fun, you know, like taxes or reorganizing the kitchen drawer, whatever, I don't know. But if I force myself to do chores and things that I really don't like, I remember how much I love writing. And also, it just frees my mind. I plant the problem in my brain, and then I go and I do something else, and slowly but surely I start to solve the problem. I think about the characters, and pretty soon, if I'm patient, I know the answer will come to me eventually. I just have to, like you said, let go a little and allow my subconscious to shake things up and spit them out again, and it'll be more clear. And I think that writers have a really hard time saying, no, I have to work. I have to write every single day. And while that's a great thing to try to do, I also think it's important to take some time off and allow yourself to, you know, change focus a little bit so that you can come back with fresh eyes and a fresh heart and start over on a clean page. And so today I had a writing date with one of my writing partners, and we were together, so I couldn't do anything but write because she was sitting across from me. And and so I opened my file, and I think I even wrote on Twitter. So basically what I have here is a very big mess. But as I even just said that and admitted it, I looked at my chapters. I realized, oh, I know what the problem is. This has to happen sooner. And so I just started rearranging things and figuring out, okay, it's not as bad as it seemed at first. You've got everything here. You just didn't tell it in the right order, and now you have to go back and finesse some stuff, and then you can be on your way again. So I think you have to be, you know, you need to let yourself have some time, and you need to not be so hard on yourself all the time. Like you said, that voice that says, oh,
sure,
you can't do this.
Yeah,
or, you know,
it's
you
true.
Can.
And of course, and I think that what's, you know, my wife was going through something similar, and the thing you want, and as writers, of course, it's a great opportunity to learn about ourselves through the work, because we're alone and because we have only our thoughts to bring us up or bring us down. And it's hard to remember sometimes, but nothing can be created from a position of hopelessness. It simply isn't going to happen. You know, that is the position out of which you have to come in order for anything to begin. And hopelessness can sound very convincing. You know, this is it. We've seen the truth now, and it's just, you know, the career's over or whatever it is. But nothing actually happens from that place. It just can't. It's not an answer to anything. And it is such an act. Honestly, I think it's an act of faith, because you have to trust in what you don't yet see and what will come. Right? Isn't faith the belief in that which you cannot see? And so much of writing, you don't know. You really don't know.
True. true.
For me anyway. So, and speaking of which, still have a few more minutes. One of the things I loved about that interview with Maurice Sendak, that little clip, you talked about the imagination, and I've always seen writing as a relationship with the imagination, with this thing that sort of visits me. Does that resonate with you at all?
Yeah, I think that a lot of times when a story comes to me and it grows and then I become something I want to write about, it's usually a question about why would someone do this, or how did someone get into this situation? And it's a question, and what drives the question or to be answered is imagination. And so I start to imagine a story around something that's real, that's troubling me. And so, for example, with See You at Harry's, that's my newest book. It's really about, it's a lot about my life. And I wanted to write the book. My brother died 9 years ago, kind of suddenly, and I wanted to rewrite our childhood for him as sort of a gift and a memory for him. And I wanted to write this really funny story about our childhood and reinvent what happens and give him a happier ending. And so I started doing that, and it was somewhat therapeutic, but it didn't become totally therapeutic until I could fictionalize the story enough and make it about loss. Because after all, if I was going to write about my brother who I'd lost, I realized, well, that's obviously what this book has to be about, even though that's not what I intended in the beginning. And so I think, you know, I used my imagination was a place of safety. I was able to not, you know, change what really happened, you know, mm-hmm. to something fictional, but the emotional truth was the same. And right. I think that's something that writers struggle with all the time, is we're told by, usually by people who aren't actually writers, to write what you know. And I think in some ways that's really wonderful advice, but it's also horrible advice, because people cling to the truth. And if you're writing fiction, you have to be able to let go. And so part of becoming a writer is learning the difference between the real truth and harnessing the emotional truth. And I think
yeah.
once you can do that, that's what you need. That's what it means to write what you know.
I agree.
Not the other stuff. So.
Yeah, I agree. I actually think that, you know, I do know some stuff, I guess, you know, over my years I've accumulated. But the one thing I know for sure that no one can argue with me about, and no one can know as well as I do, is what I love. I mean, I know what I love, and it's with me all the time, and it never leaves. And that, to me, is what I would seek to write the most, what moves me and what I most want to share. That's what I really know, not that I was a waiter for a certain number of years and I played football or whatever. I mean, I do know about that stuff, but
yeah.
that's different.
Yeah.
It's very different.
Right.
You know, because you know what is valuable to you.
Sure.
That's
yeah.
right. And the imagination's, so you, I mean, obviously your brother passed 9 years ago, but the imagination is so interesting and powerful, because I have people that have passed away too. And, oh, that's just time. Well, I was just going to say that the imagination actually lets me visit with them in my own way, in the quiet
like
of my heart.
Letter. It's a
yeah.
love letter to them. And that's really what I think See You at Harry's is.
That's great.
So.
That is great. Well, Joe, as I suspected, it was a delight to speak with you. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
It was my pleasure. Have a good luck on the next book, and I hope
thank
you find
you.
Your way out of your little mess right now.
Thanks very much.
Well, bye-bye. Everybody, there you go. Bye-bye. There you go. Just, you know, I say it and I say it and I say it. Write what you love. And I mean it, and I think that's what everybody wants to write. It's what everybody wants to live, and it's what everybody wants to read. So go do it. Go write what you love, do what you love, live what you love. I don't think you can go wrong. Until next week. I think it's Erica Bauermeister next week. Ta-ta.